My name is Brian Bonsenauer, and today, this session, I want to focus on the center of the universe. And so the circular theme here, I think, is helpful for that, to kind of focus on the thinking about the center of the universe. We're going to do that using the scientific story of creation. And both of those words are, I think, important to what we're going to talk about today. The first one, the idea of the scientific story, is that the scientific part is based on the empirical observations that have been made over the past 30, 40 years about the nature of the universe, and then models that have been developed to try to capture and fit those observations about what's going on in the universe, looking out at the stars, the galaxies, the clusters of galaxies, and trying to make sense out of what's seen there. People have developed models for trying to understand that. That's the scientific part, but there's also the story part, the scientific story of creation. And I think the story part is something that just recently has been happening. It's just a recent sort of innovation or new direction for the scientific method, if you will. And how I would say this, what the story part is opening up the scientific model to the mystery that's always been inherent in it, but has been kind of glossed over in sort of getting at the facts and the figures of what's happening, the rate of speed of the expansion of the universe, the number of galaxies. The facts and these figures from the empirical observations can tend to gloss over the story or the mystery that's inherent in this story of creation. And the story aspect of it, the part that's being brought forward now, opens that possibility. It opens the possibility of reflecting on the mystery, because as any good story does, it just tells sort of part of the story and leaves open to interpretation what the meaning behind it is. All of those fables that you've all heard tell the story, and then it's up to you to draw out meaning from that. And that's really, I think, what I see as the primary benefit and a much-needed tone to this story. Some of the work being done in that has been done by Brian Swim, and this book is kind of a comprehensive story book. It's called The Universe Story. They have it over in the bookstore. There's another one of his that's just come out, and I haven't read it, but I did glance through it. I just saw it here. And it's a little bit thinner than this one, and it's kind of an encapsulation from what I got from looking through it. It doesn't go into quite the detail of this one, but still gives a good sort of story as it goes along. This one does an excellent job as well of doing that. I'm going to read a little bit.
What's the name of the other one?
The other one is called, it just jumped out of my head. Let's see. The Hidden Heart of the Cosmos. That's his latest work. This one, I should mention, he was not alone in. He authored this with Thomas Berry, who, among other things, is a cultural anthropologist and many things besides that. But together, Brian Swim, if you don't know, is a mathematical cosmologist, which just means he's been working on models to explore the origin of the universe, mathematical models that fit the empirical data, the measurements of how the galaxies are moving. So he and Thomas Berry have worked together to create the story of the creation of the universe. So that's what has come out of that effort. Let me tell you a story then. So as a good storyteller once said, I don't know if it happened this way, but I know that this is true.
Money. I was looking for, I think I was looking for different talks.
Might be in the fireside.
Next door.
Sustainability. Yeah.
This one?
Okay.
This is,
So just sit back and listen to the story. And we'll get us started with a little interlude. Originating power, mystery, the hand of God brought forth a universe. All the energy that would ever exist in the entire course of time erupted in a single quantum, a singular gift, existence. If in the future stars would blaze and lizards would blink in their light, these actions would be powered by the same numinous energy that flared forth at the dawn of time. There was no place in the universe that was separate from the originating power of the universe. Each thing of the universe had its very roots in this realm. Even space-time itself was a tossing, churning, foaming out of the originating reality, instant by instant. Each of the sextillion particles that foamed into existence had its roots in this quantum vacuum, this originating reality, mystery, the hand of God. The birth of the universe was not an event in time. You see, time begins simultaneously with the birth of existence. The realm or power that brings forth the universe is not itself an event in time, nor a position in space, but is rather the very matrix out of which the conditions arise that enable temporal events to occur in space. Though the originating power gave birth to the universe 15 billion years ago, this realm of power is not simply located there at that point in time, but is rather a condition of every moment of the universe, past, present, and to come. So that's a part of the story there, the very beginning of the universe. Come up here, join us.
Thank you.
At that very beginning, that instant, at the beginning of the universe, one of the mathematical models, one of the models' ways of thinking about it is a single point. A single quantum event occurred, and out of that event has come everything that we know. This room, the sky, the trees, these wonderful daisies, the chairs that you're sitting on, the gravity that holds you to those chairs, your desire to come to this workshop, the joy, the smile on your face as you looked up at the mountains this morning and went, I can't believe I'm here. All of those things came out of that same originating event, mystery, the hand of God. Now, one of the models for thinking about this event and for coming to this conclusion dates back to About 20, 25 years ago with some work by a man named Hubble and another man named Albert Einstein, who were developing respectively observation and theory for thinking about the origin of the universe and matching that to the what was observed. And out of that work, specifically out of the work, the observations made by Hubble, Hubble noticed an amazing thing. When he looked in this direction, out in the night sky, okay, he stares out through the telescope in this direction and finds a supercluster of galaxies, not just one galaxy, but a whole group of galaxies that's quite a distance away from us. Looking at that galaxy and noticing how the light, the change, the shifting of the light has occurred, notices that that galaxy is moving away from us, straight away from us. Okay. And then he turns the telescope and looks in this direction. All right. And what do you think he sees?
Moving away.
It's moving away, yeah, it's moving away. Now when I heard that, I thought, wait a minute. If this one's moving away, this one better be coming at me, right? But it's not. In whatever direction you look, north, south, east, west, anywhere you can see a supercluster of galaxies, it's moving away from us.
Is that who we're the center of the universe?
Well, we'll see if we can get to that. And here's what I'd like you to do to see if we can get to that. Let's see, I've got some balloons here. And so we'll just pass some of these around. Send those around that way. You just need one. Send some around this way. And I'll take a pen. We need a pen here as well. Don't blow them up yet. Or at least if you do blow them up, let them out. Does anyone have a pen?
Can you get some more?
I may.
Oh,
I've got one.
Yeah.
Anyone else? Everyone have one? You could probably share with us. So with your pen, what I'd like you to do is draw on your balloon, and I've checked that although you may need a little paper to get them started, these will work. Just draw some swirls, some stars, some dots. Draw what you think looks like a supercluster of galaxies. Okay, just draw a bunch of them all over, in the front, the back, the sides. Just make marks, stars, squigglies, little hooky-doos. Some lighter.
Okay, here comes the milk.
Okay. Now you get the other side. All right. Do that so fast. Okay, looks like these people are getting somewhat done. If you're not done yet, just turn your ears this way and listen for a second. I need you to use your imagination now, okay? I'm going to be doing this with the kids tomorrow, so we'll see who's better at using their imagination with this. But do your best. Use your imagination and make yourself an ant, all right? Now make yourself an ant, not just in size, but think like an ant. And here's what I mean. Think like an ant in that you're always on the surface of things, okay? You're an ant, you're always crawling on the surface. You've never gotten down on your hands and knees and looked under the bed for something. You've never reached up on the top shelf to get something. You've always been sort of on the surface of things, okay? Think of that. All you know is the surface. You're this ant that's only on the surface of things, okay? Because our model for the universe here is just the surface of this world. It's only the surface. It's not inside, it's not outside. It's just the surface of the balloon, okay? Everybody ready? Let's do it. Blow it up about that far. That could have happened to the universe, and we wouldn't all be here blowing up balloons. Okay, now, if you've got it about this far, notice your stars, squiggles, etc. Okay, and pick one out. Pick one of your favorites out. All right. Okay. So find a favorite. And then kind of look at the ones around it, all right? Notice a couple of the ones around it there. If there's not any around it, find another favorite. Notice a couple of ones around that, all right? So there's my favorite. Now blow it up again. And take a look. Find your favorite again. They're helium gray. I don't know what happened to them.
I lost my favorite. I'll have to look at somebody else's favorite. So
it gets lighter.
It gets lighter. Good.
Bigger.
Further
away.
And further away from the ones around it. Right? Mm-hmm. Now is that one unique? Did all the others just get further away from it and that one stayed the same? They all got bigger, they all got lighter, and they all got further away from each other. This is...
And they're all explosive.
Well, we hope not. We hope not. So this is a model for thinking about the expansion of the universe. This observation that all of these superclusters of galaxies are moving away from us. All right? All of them are moving away from us. And so the model says that it's not just here, but if we were on another if we were within another supercluster of galaxies, looking back at the supercluster that makes up the Milky Way, or that of which the Milky Way is a part, we would see it moving away from us and all the other superclusters of galaxies moving away. Just like on your balloon, all of those were moving away from each other. Okay? But not only that. Not only that. What Hubble also saw in this is, say he's here with this telescope.
Is that a telescope with a good lens on it?
Yeah, very good lens.
That's the Canadian arm of the Hubble telescope.
Okay, let's say he's looking out at this supercluster of galaxies here. All right. And it's moving away. And let's just say, so we can keep it kind of something that we can sort of get our heads around. Let's say it's moving away at 100 miles an hour. Okay? This one out here, if this one is 100 miles, let's say this one is another 100 miles, or a total of 200 miles, this supercluster of galaxies is moving away at 200 miles per hour. So not only are they all moving away, no matter what direction you look, but no matter what direction you look, the distance they are away is proportional to their speed that they're moving, that they're receding from us. Right? Now, this one's moving 100, this one's moving 200, so go back in time with those. Go back in time with those. This one's moving 100 miles an hour and it's 100 miles away, and this one's moving 200 miles an hour and it's 200 miles away. When you go back in time with those, they bunch up right here. Here's another way of thinking about it. Use your ant now, your ant mind. You're walking on the surface of this balloon, all right? And instead of expanding, we're going to go back in time, so I'm going to let the air out. Okay, we're going back in time. I'm on my supercluster of galaxies here, going back in time. Everything's getting closer to me, right? It's all getting closer and closer. Okay, and if I could get rid of that balloon down to a single point, the point where I was standing is the point where it began, right? Because it's all just getting smaller and smaller and smaller. Pretty soon you run out of space, you run out of time. You're at the beginning, you're at the originating point. Okay. So that is basically the model and the observations that lead cosmologists, scientists now to believe that the universe, the center of the universe, is where?
Everywhere.
And more importantly, it's here. You know, you always knew it. You were the center of the universe, you always knew it. Now it's been proven. You are the center of the universe. But the amazing insight is that everyone else is too. Everywhere else is too. Is the center of the universe. I mean, that's just... If the Copernican Revolution was an amazing event and changed the course of history, that the Earth is not the center around which the sun rotates, but the other way around, think what a difference this observation makes. I mean, it's just beginning to impact on our consciousness that we are the center of the universe. We are at the place where everything began, where everything continues to owe its existence to. We are at that place that brought forth the Milky Way galaxy, that brought forth your parents and this chair and those daisies and these mountains here. That place, that creative potential is within us. It's here, it's now, it's this time, this place. Now, this is not a new insight, okay? And one of the reasons that the story of the universe, I think, is so powerful is that it opens these interpretations up for you to bring your meaning to this. And I think with the Jubilee, we've had a wonderful expression of this this insight that was read yesterday at a couple of the services there. The passage from Isaiah that was read, that the Spirit of the Lord is upon you. The Spirit of the Lord is upon you. All right. Or Jesus's the thrust of his whole mission, that the reign of God is at hand. It's here. It's now. It's in within you. You don't have to look somewhere else. You don't have to look in the temple. You don't have to look to the elders. It's within you. It's in your heart. Or within the earliest roots of our Christian tradition, with the writings of St. Paul, about the Spirit within us, the Spirit of God within us that cries out, that groans in prayer. That the Spirit, this creative power, this mystery that brought forth the universe, is here now within us, and it's in within every one of us. So the story of the universe, the empirical observations then allow, within this framework of story, allow us to re-image our place in the universe. And I think just in time, if you will, if we're going to, based on from the things that Larry was talking about last night, about sustainability and the unsustainability of where we at, to know that we are at the place, that we are at the time that has that creativity that brought forth the universe, we can re-envision our world. We do have that Spirit of God within us that will allow us to bring forth a new creation, a new way of living, a jubilee. That we have that within our being. Okay. Maybe just a couple questions about that.
I still have a problem with that.
Yeah.
If I'm the center of the universe on Earth, what about if I was on Mars? Would I still be the center of the universe?
Mm-hmm. That's the insight. The insight is that the center of the universe is, the word that they use is omnicentric. That the center of the universe is everywhere. It's hard to get your mind, I mean, it's a struggle. People have struggled with this for a long time. In fact, Einstein, when first developed the model for this, couldn't believe it. He couldn't believe it. He said, no, it can't be. That can't be the way it is. And he changed his equations. He changed his equations because he just couldn't believe it. It totally confounded him. He could not believe it. And when Hubble, a few years later, said, my God, look at what we can see. This is it. This is the way it is. Einstein later reflected on that was the single biggest mistake he'd ever made in his entire life.
Was that agreed upon by all the astronomers and stuff?
Yes. Hmm. I mean, there's always within the scientific community, there's, you know, some sense of an openness to new observation. But the standard model for the universe is this model.
It wouldn't be, like, if you put the whole universe in this room, you know, a smaller thing, it seems to me that it wouldn't work out.
Right.
There'd be some sense.
Right. You're right, and the reason that it's so hard to get our mind around is the same reason that this balloon model is just a model and it's not the universe, is because this balloon model, when you blow it up, it expands into the space of this room, all right? But the universe, there's no place for it to expand into. All space is the universe, and all time is encapsulated in this universe, so this expansion of the universe isn't expanding into anything. The expansion is mystery. I mean, that's about as good as you can say. For yeah,
I guess it, sometimes when you go out stargazing and you take a beam of light and you know that light travels so far, and yet the light that we're seeing on the planet now had been traveling in our direction in order for us mm-hmm. to see it, mm-hmm. and yet the lights that are beamed out into space are still traveling now before they even reach some of those lights.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea of expanding out, it makes sense in that sense. And at the same time, it's the time concept that throws us all off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that travel. I mean, you just have 100 miles here.
Yeah, it's a lot farther than that.
166,000 miles per hour, per second.
Right.
And that's light. And so we're seeing some of this light that's taken literally thousands upon millions of years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This is so perfect. I mean, it's just so perfect.
Mm.
It's the only thing that makes sense, really. It's funny that it took that long.
Mm.
it just...
Okay, another question. Did you want to say? I have another question. Mm-hmm. These people that are listening for voices from outer space.
Or signals from outer space. Specific.
Yeah, signals, I meant, I'm just trying to think, you know, they're all being put away from us.
That's true.
And we're sending messages, all right, too, in case somebody hits your hooks on to ours.
Right.
I think that kind of quite simple to me.
New things are being born in the space that's created by moving away.
Stars are coalescing into existence and... many of them dying.
And burning out.
I'm having trouble with the leap of this whole universe idea. So it's a good thing that we are the center of the universe. Well, I was just sitting here thinking, you know, when you're raising children, one of the things I've said to my daughter is, you're not the center of the universe. I mean, it seems to me that being the center of the universe, at least in the way that we think about it, has the shadow side as well as the good side. So I guess I was just wondering, it seemed to me to be sort of a giant leap to say, okay, we're the center, and this is a great thing and full of new possibilities.
It seems to me
it could also be a very... negative kind of.
But the difficulty there is surely in semantics. In the center, we don't have the center. It's something that
is universal.
It's just
so tell your daughter she's the center of the universe. But tell her that everyone else is the center of the universe as well. I mean I think that's what you're saying, that it's that idea of being universal is, boy, you know, I wake up some mornings and I don't quite get it, you know, and most mornings. So, and it's only in sort of flashes that it seems, as you said, just so perfect.
Well, it is. I mean, that is what we call God. That is who we. That's it.
Are you saying that at every point in the universe, every other point in the universe is moving away from you? So no matter what point you're at, everything else is moving away from you.
Well, the expansion of the universe is seen generally when you're looking at the galaxies and the cluster of the galaxy. In that local group, the expansion of the universe has not been observed. All right, and it's not clear whether that observation is just because we don't have the instruments to detect it, because they're relatively close together, and that the observation of the everything moving away is the observation of all of these superclusters of galaxies moving away, because these superclusters of galaxies are so far apart from each other that to see the speed that they're moving is doable. For instance, up here, to see it moving 100 miles an hour. Being 100 miles away is doable when we're talking the scale of distance of these superclusters.
Well, okay, we're sitting in the Milky Way. If there's another galaxy somewhere off, is the theory that someone could be sitting in the other galaxy making identical observations and they come to the same conclusion based on the empirical data?
That's what the model says. I mean, certainly we can never know that. Because we will never travel there, but that's the model.
How far away is what we see is measurable?
Say it again.
Well, if we can't measure what's close to us, then how far away does it become measurable for us?
The distances involved, and it's at the level of the distance between the superclusters of galaxies. That's where the measurements have been made. And that distance is something on the order of 10 to the, I think it's around 10 to the 12th, 10 to the 13th meters. So I don't even know what the word for that would be. it's big. In fact, the next session, the session tomorrow that I want to do is on the relative size of things in the universe, and there's a wonderful tape in there called The Powers of Ten by Charles and Ray Eames that does, I think, a pretty good job of showing something of that size of the distance of things. So more curious on that, come back tomorrow, we'll talk more about that.
Don't we see single stars moving away from us?
No, that's not been measured.
Okay, only the galaxies. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm. How about the black holes?
They move away too?
Well, again, at the distance of superclusters. Okay. So when we're looking at stars, we might see a star that's moving away, and then another star over here that's moving toward us, and then another star over there that's moving across this way. Because the distances to detect the expansion of the universe at the rate the universe is expanding, we need the distances between superclusters in order to detect that.
But if you're going to measure that, you also need time.
Well, what they're measuring when they're measuring the speed of those is they're measuring the shift of the light as it's received from those galaxies.
But in the black holes, there's no way to.
Right. You wouldn't be able to observe that shift, yeah.
Except as the black hole is associated with the galaxy.
With the galaxy, mm-hmm. or with a star in a galaxy, yeah.
So are we supposed to be on the surface of it?
Say it again.
Are we supposed to be on the surface of this model?
On this model, on the balloon model, the three-dimensional space is collapsed or squashed to the surface, just the surface, exactly so. You got it.
So you mean Christopher Columbus wasn't too far off?
This, again, the balloon is just the model for the universe. And I like the observation that the universe is the only event that can accurately, exactly model itself. That there's no model of the universe, accurate model of the universe, except the universe. But the models can help us to understand some of these insights. So that's where they're useful. We have to accept the limitations of them and pay attention to those, yeah.
I think I remember hearing somewhere that the models of the ancient people, they thought that space and all the stars, it was like a column that was put over the earth, and that it was just little holes.
Right.
And it was light coming in through those little poked holes.
Like being a greenhouse.
Right. Or big dome, so to speak.
Oh, well, we're out there.
Right, it's interesting, there's different models.
Right. Well, I'd like to use the rest of the time we have to sort of explore this insight in a little different way. And to do that, what I thought we would do is an activity with a mandala. And a mandala is a circular drawing, a circular expression that's, it may have older roots, but where I became familiar with it was out of the work of Carl Jung, who used it to explore in his depth of psychology. It's also been used in some, Richard Rohr in particular, within a Christian tradition, to explore insights and in spirituality. And what I'd like to do with that is this experience of the center of the universe, to me, has great potential for tapping into creativity, to our creativity. When I think about that, this is the place where the creativity that brought forth the galaxies, the mountains, the whole Earth, it exists, that this is the center of that creativity. I need help getting into that. I mean, I need help experiencing that or coming to terms with that. And just three suggestions that I found helpful for me, and one of those then we'll go and do a little bit of with this mandala. The first one is solitude. that's been helpful for me in sort of tapping into that understanding, to have some time alone. The second is quiet prayer, and oftentimes I find that within my prayer it can get rather busy. I need to take some time. I like the image of taking time to listen to God as well as to talk with God. And the third is within the creative process, and that has many forms. And certainly all of these things are wonderfully available here at Holden, so in your time left, you can experience these. But let me just say a word about the creative process. One thing that I struggled with in getting in touch with this, or understanding it, is getting beyond the product mode of creativity, that there's this outcome that I'm looking for when I start to create something, and that I'm judging what I'm doing based on the outcome that comes out of it, rather than just letting the process be what it is, rather than just saying I'm creating, and it's in that process of creating that I connect in a real way with the process, with the creative power of the universe, with God, within that creative energy that brought forth the universe. By creating, I'm connecting with that. And I found that to be a powerful experience in my life, one that I'm still hoping to explore more. But I'd like to give you just a chance to do some of that. I have put up some watercolors and paper here. And let's just see how many we have. Perfect. So there are 12 stations here, and we'll get another 6 right out over here to give you a chance to play a little bit if you'd like to do this. The process of the mandala is a good one for this, because the mandala is just a way of reflecting or being present to this insight, an insight. And the insight that I'd like you to reflect on and be present to is the center of the universe, this insight of the center of the universe, to try to not understand it, but to try to experience it in a different way. And the mandala as a circle is a wonderful, I think, experience for that, because the circle is just based on a center. I mean, that's the whole basis of the circle, is that there's a center to it. So if you just come up and take a chair and find a brush, and we'll get some other stations set up at this table over here. Let's see, we have 1, 2, 3 spots over here. So I think we can get everybody through 2 tables. And just, I want you to really pay attention just to the process that goes on. Try to get beyond thinking about what it looks like, what's coming out of it, okay? Just really think about the process that happens as you start creating. Right here. And if you're having trouble with that, getting to that, what I'd recommend that you do to just get over that what am I going to create, is to just wet your brush, dip it in some color, whatever color appeals to you, close your eyes and smear it somewhere, okay? Just close your eyes and give a good smear. It doesn't even have to be on the paper, just smear it, all right? That'll get you going. After that, you're home free. Close your eyes, smear it, and then get going. Right over here.
These paints are
And then go with your smear. Just keep creating after that smear. You're on the road with that. Just pay attention to the process in this whole thing. The process of creating. What's happening in that? Know that the creative power that brought forth the universe is present in your every stroke of the brush.
Are we supposed to go in the line here?
No. It's not required.
Because I've already gone out of the line.
The line is just a meditation. There's nothing, there are no rules to this. Draw on the table, on your neighbor.
Oh, hey. Okay.
Hey, I just did laundry.
And the image is the center of the universe. Just keep that image sort of at your, within this process that goes on. Use different brushes, different colors.
Gosh, different. I don't want a bright color either.
Yeah.
I think it will try drawing on my snow.
There you go.
Not too successful.
How many brushes can I get dirty here?
All?
That's it. It's the process is the key. What comes out is what comes out.
You know, if you have these two books, there's something relating to
it. Yeah, I'm going to talk about the second one in a minute here. Thank you for reminding me of that. That brought forth those daisies out there, the mountains, all of it. That's what's at work.
Ooh, I like your eyes.
Thank you.
don't stop what you're doing unless you're done.
How do you know when you're done?
You're done when it feels like you're done.
I think I'm done.
But just if you have had or are having any experience of that sense of that center of creativity, that place that knows what needs to be created, what's coming into creation. If you could put any words on that or any reflection on what the process looks like, feel free to share that with the rest of us.
Flowing.
Yeah.
Jabbing.
She's
jabbing.
Jabbing. Jabbing. Revolving.
Revolving. I think symmetry.
Symmetry.
Yeah. My universe actually isn't as chaotic as it might have been.
Right.
Random acts.
Interesting. Other ones.
Wild.
Love it.
Chaotic.
Interconnected.
Isn't it interesting how we're all the center and we're all so different?
Differentiation, difference. Differences.
This is because I looked at yours.
I love it.
Actually, I find this process kind of peaceful.
Great.
I mean, just sort of
doing. Yeah.
There's actually a lot of humor in it too.
Humor,
I
love it.
I did do on my arm.
So out of bounds.
Yeah.
The size of things. It's called Imagining the Universe, a Visual Journey by Edward Packard.
Is it in the library also?
I don't know if it's in the library. I haven't looked for it there.
Okay.
Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
Enjoying your creative process here.
Of course.
Hey, can I put it on yours?
She wants to put hers on the refrigerator.
I'm continually amazed when I let go of what comes out of it, how beautiful things are.